Hi, and welcome to episode 494 of the MWA podcast. I'm Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Sean, Mark, and Brian. Today, we're excited to have a longtime friend of the show, Anthony Warace, as our guest. Anthony is an accomplished hobbyist woodworker and chairmaker. Anthony is also the resident chef of the MWA podcast. So,
cannot wait for that company dinner.
Yes. For those not in the know, Anthony, or Chef, as he's better known, is the head of the New York area Meta. What's your exact title?
The executive chef for New York City.
Okay,
for Meta. Not the city itself.
So, the whole city.
Everyone comes Meta through me.
So that includes all the New York facilities for both Meta, Facebook, and Instagram, right?
Facebook and Instagram, yes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And Oculus.
Oculus.
I got a Quest 2 for Christmas.
Nice. You're going on a Quest as well?
No, I got a Quest.
WhatsApp, too.
Yeah.
Got WhatsApp in the belt there as well.
Cool.
Oh, wow. All right.
So, Anthony, what are your corporate discounts, you know?
No.
If you want any more of my jigs, maybe we can strike a deal.
Oh.
Well, before we talk to Anthony and all he's been up to, let's dip our toes into the woodworking news. So, first up, I want to revisit something we mentioned a few episodes ago, and that's the Woodpecker's Route and Plane Benchtop Board Mill. We originally looked at this and said, hey, this is a pretty good idea at a reasonable price. At that time, the capacity, so this is basically a tabletop mill. So you, if you're wanting to flatten a board, let's say like a cutting board or something like that, or a mini slab, something of that nature, this is something that will guide your router back and forth. You know, we've seen a bunch of these, but this one is at a reasonable price, and it looks to be fairly good. But at the time we first reviewed it, the capacity of this was only 15 inches. So it could be the board can be as long as you want because you're just moving this thing down, but the width capacity was only 15 inches. They've since now introduced a larger capacity, the XL version, and that has up to 24 inches of capacity. So that looks pretty good, and it's $190. The 15-inch capacity one was $150, so probably worth the $40.
Caught my eye about this page was when you scroll to the bottom, it says you might also like 10 board feet of walnut and maple for $170.
Well, you know,
I need to start selling 10 board foot packs of maple and walnut because that is great markup. I love it.
That's precision milled in a CNC farm in your just outside.
They use the board. They use the route and plane.
These are all hand done. Yes, with the route and plane process to precise dimension.
Exactly.
You can make a big old charcuterie board with the same amount of dollars that you would take to buy the machine to make the board.
Yeah. Well, it says here any knots or voids in the walnut or maple are filled in with red anodized aluminum.
You put it right in there. Nice.
Yep.
Nice. I did not see where that was going, Kyle. I was thinking.
I find it interesting. On their pricing, I mean, this new XL 24-inch capacity is, pre-sale 190. It's going to sell for 210. I mean, minor discount. But down two slots below that, they are selling just the conversion kit, which effectively is just longer rails, but you use the same feet.
Mm-hmm.
That's $130.
So
those little feet amount for $40 to $60.
Yeah, you know where the money is in making this, then. That's the major material cost.
Put out $150 for the one that that was a little narrow, you can get this for nearly the same cost as that original one, just the top plate alone.
And you know there's going to be people who collect. They're going to buy them both.
Oh, because you have the conversion on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I want the 24-inch capacity. Sometimes I don't need it.
All your red stuff up there. Yeah.
Well, this is black, though. This is all
yeah, this is
got red accents, red knobs.
It does have red accents, red knobs.
You can use it with your black and red router. And yeah, you can match it all up.
Didn't Woodpeckers have a larger version of this a couple years ago?
I think they had like those slab flattening mills.
Yeah, with the rods.
Right. This isn't for slabs. This is more for littler stuff, but
yeah, because they're showing it with a cutting board, I think, on the
show with the cutting board, but
and they're taking off like a half inch in depth in a pass.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty, yeah,
pretty severe, and maybe with limited dust
to start with.
Somehow, there's no dust on the front or top of that view,
and even no collection either.
And there's zero collection on a trim router taking a half inch gouge out of end grain.
And it's not a half. I mean, it is like an inch wide, and
yeah,
like 3/8 deep. It's an enormous cut. So I'm very impressed with that. I need the ad is for the Milwaukee router that they're
using. That can handle that. Like, can handle walnut and maple checkerboard end grain.
That is why it's 17 and change per board foot, because it's dustless wood.
That's where
the money is.
It's amazing.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, they are innovating at all ends. That's astounding. Well,
Woodpeckers beat me again. Damn it.
Yeah. Chris Schwartz, I think this might be on his Substack, but he recently had a post about all the pictures that he's collected throughout the years that have, you know, in woodworking pictures where they're trying to promote something. And it's just like, hey, you know, this guy's, you know, hand planing maple, but it's, you know, cherry shavings on the floor or something like that, you know. Anyway, well, moving right along, Rockler has a new grinding and honing jig with a guide. And I saw this. I thought it was pretty interesting. I think there are probably better honing guides and jigs out there. But, you know, I'd be interested to see a expanded review. What kind of sets this one apart is the honing guide can be attached to a tool rest for a grinder, and also grind the like a chisel or a plane blade. They show with the chisel, but you can actually grind it, and then you don't have to change any of your settings, and you can go to your stone and then hone it. I thought that was kind of interesting. And it's got some little setup blocks so that when it's in the tool rest for the grinder, you can get it properly angled so that you're grinding at 25 degrees or 30 degrees or 20 degrees, whatever you're grinding at. So it's got some little setup blocks that register on the wheel of the grinder. So
yeah.
I thought it was a pretty unique idea, and
it looks pretty well, you know, like adjustable for this kind of thing. Does Wolverine? I mean, they're a big, you know, sharpening thing. Do they have anything like this or one way? Yeah,
they just have a big flat, like plate that you just put the chisel on, which is kind of like all you need.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. This seems like a solution in search of a problem. Sorry. Well, I'm not sorry. I'm happy to be the guy who poo-pooed on this. It just seems like really extreme, overdone.
I thought it was unique.
You know what I like? I like this angle setup for the jig.
Yep.
But that's also really easy to do with just a stick of wood.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. I just, that's so many. What is it? Novel solutions to modern day woodworking,
right?
Of course.
You know,
I mean, the little silicone water tray that you
not only get
up into, but you can bring it up and wet your water stone with at the same time. Like,
yeah, you gotta have that.
Gotta have it.
Where else would you get water?
I mean, that's one thing. I mean, Rockler's for a while been that company that's going to mix a little metal, a little silicone, little rubber tips here and there to make something that's more featured than what you could do on your own.
Yeah,
maybe not always to a great effect, but I mean, if this is reasonable, if you don't have a setup to confidently grind angles when you're resetting, I mean, this is like not just honing, you know, jobs. This is like you're truly re-upping your blades. But if you have found to not be accurate in your grinding efforts in the past, this is a solution for that, and might go right into the sharpening stone after.
Yeah, the way I look at it is the cost, because it's $120.
Right,
which isn't bad,
but you have no tool rest for your grinder. You only have this.
Yes.
So you are limiting your options to grinding chisels and plane irons to a specific angle using this jig, but you can't just take a bolt over there and grind it. You know,
because
you're gonna mess up your fancy plane iron.
The Wolverine jig is gonna be at least $150 by itself.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I have that. That jig.
I know just the grinding platform is $45, because I have one. I needed another one recently.
They come in a pair, right? Left and right.
Yeah. Well, you got the thing that holds the bar in that's right below your grinding
wheel. The quick release thing.
Yeah, the quick release thing. And then the actual platform is like $45. And then, of course, they sell different platforms you can put in there. But just the standard grinding platform, little flat one, is like $45. And I think you're, you know, but if you got their standard setup, you know, that has that platform and then the thing for doing your turning tools on, I want to say it's like $150 at least. Yeah.
So you're not out a whole lot more for something you can use for just basically everything.
Well, it doesn't have the honing guide.
Oh, you're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. It doesn't have the honing guide. I can't really see the honing guide all that well, to tell you.
It looks like a beefed up like a version of the Eclipse or Lee Nielsen. Yeah.
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 Yeah. They don't really show it in great detail, do they? There's that one picture.
Like I said, I'd want to see a review or something of this, or at least go in the store and look at it and play with it.
Yeah.
To see if it's something.
And one thing about that, with that like transferable, you get your depth set, you go to the grinder, then you go to the stone.
Yep.
You want to make sure that wheel that you're rolling on your stone didn't pick up a bunch of aggregate, you know, or just slough of grinding, you know, dust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the stuff you don't want to transfer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have to wipe it down. But you got to do that when you're going through grits anyway. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they don't show that operation. I'm just saying that you got to keep that in mind.
They have an 8-minute video. Rag.
Oh, they have an 8-minute video rag. I didn't watch?
Yes, they have an 8-minute video you didn't watch. I didn't watch it either. I just skipped through it. But anyway.
That's fair.
I just watched the things I had questions about, like how is he setting the angle for the on the wheel, on the grinding wheel, and all that kind of stuff. So I thought it was unique. But yeah, I mean, there's a 100 different ways to do this. And Mark brings up a good point that you are, you know, basically taking up a tool rest option. So
I bet Rockler has a quick release switch out for another $100. You can drop a tool rest in there and go at it, because it's got a plate that you mount.
Yep.
To the bench. So I'm not seeing any links to it, but maybe it's coming soon, you know.
Coming soon.
Yeah,
coming
the next soon. Round of things that go on that plate.
Yep.
Yep.
But if you're looking for a grinding and honing jig guide, Rockler might have yours. It's available for $119.99 and available now, ready to ship.
Sean,
after our glowing review.
You're just so fair and balanced, Sean.
I know. Hey, you know what? Because I know there is something that, you know, one thing is not for everyone. If it's not for you, it might be for someone else. You got to leave that option up there. No discrimination.
I thought it was unique. Right. I thought it was thinking outside the box a little bit.
Okay.
Stay in the corner.
You're right. You're right. Somebody I got somebody out there wants to buy this thing, and they should be able to buy it if they want it.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair trade. Don't tell Mark you bought it.
Yeah. Don't mention to Mark.
Don't bring it to class. Just don't bring it to class. Yeah.
Well, anyway, following up, our last item here is some good news. Amanda Russell is back at Fine Woodworking Magazine.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
How did this happen?
Great.
Yes, I just heard their last podcast, and I think she's assistant editor, something like that. I think they kind of reshuffled some, you know, responsibilities and titles. So I think Amanda's going to be doing, at least from what I understand, their podcast. So they'll be she'll be you know, co-hosting and even hosting the podcast going forward. So the Shop Talk Live podcast. So
you've been a break.
Yeah. So it's great. And she's also going to be doing other things digitally too, you know, with the website and whatnot.
What did you guys think of the issue that just came out?
I haven't seen it. If I saw if I see it, it's going to be online. So I didn't get a physical copy. Did you get a physical copy?
I got a physical copy. I'm hoping it's so. There's a great article in there by Peter Galbert on finding straight grain in a sawn board.
Okay.
Very helpful. Mm-hmm. But it felt like a different magazine, just a little bit. It felt light, and I'm hoping it's just because like they're in the transition period, and it's like
I wouldn't think that would have affected it so quickly, because normally they have those things, those articles and content, you know, locked in months in advance.
Yeah.
Do you think the content was just superficial, or was just a lot of ads?
I don't know. It's just like I flipped through it and it was over. Like it was not a full magazine. And so they could have said, well, let's push some articles back, you know, to spread the editorial calendar out a little bit. I don't know. I've also been noticing the de-evolution of the Adirondack chair that's been going on in fine woodworking. It gets more and more basic every time they build one. You know, like the first one I saw, it might have been Popular Woodworking, but the guy, he's up in Canada. He does a ton of bent laminations.
They need to get
I actually have those plants.
Yeah.
That was like an incredible Adirondack chair.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And then there's one that's like a little simpler. And then there's one that's all straight boards. And now there's one that's like boards cut into a profile and bolted together. And I'm just like, what's going on here? You know,
pallet wood is next.
Yeah. It wasn't fine woodworking. It was woodworking. Yeah.
Well, they need to get Pepe and Jesse on and talk about that Hyperion project chair. Yep. Yeah. So anyway, well, congratulations to Amanda. Mark's kind of the downer on the podcast this evening.
No, I'm very happy that Amanda is back. I look forward to all the greatness that she will. Maybe the reason it wasn't the same is because she wasn't there.
Probably so.
Back, it's going to immediately change.
Exactly. Well, let's move on to our Patreon shout out. So who do we have to thank this week?
For sure. We love our Patreon supporters. They help us do what we do. Today, we're going to give a shout out to our friend and supporter, Sean Nichols. Sean, you spell your name wrong, but thank you for supporting us. I'm kidding, Sean. It's fine.
You give him a hard time every time.
I do. You know why?
The one thing he's not fair and balanced about.
Just recently, I had a whole thing with T-Mobile. I had to call my wife's the main account thing, and they had to add me as a secondary admin on the thing. And I said my name was Sean. Sure as hell, I look online. They spell it like this guy with an SH, not an SE. It's just a gripe of mine because I have an Irish name and I'm Polish. It's fine. Anyway, Sean Nichols, thank you, sir, for supporting us. If you would like to join Sean supporting us and me make fun of your name, go to patreon.com/MWA podcast and support us there.
Fantastic.
Is it?
Well, let's move on to what's in the shop. So Mark, what are you working on?
Well, when I'm not playing the resident podcast grouch, I teach classes. Now I had a student here last week and we had a great time. Got a really gorgeous Boggs designed Berea Ladderback chair built. And so this morning I dropped that off at the freight depot. We're trying out a new shipper this time around since YRC vanished.
How are you packing those up in a crate or box?
A crate. Yeah. So I built a crate. I have lots of experience creating workbenches, but not very much creating chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's that?
Isn't there a fair amount of empty space in the chair?
There is. Yeah. You're shipping a lot of air.
Yeah. There's a lot of air there.
Yeah. So the Lost Art Press. So Chris Juarez did a great post a few years back on how he likes to crate chairs up. And so I kind of loosely followed that. I was going to build it as just a thin plywood box and ship it with UPS, but I was concerned about it being tipped over on its side because that's pretty much how it's going to travel on conveyors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really didn't want to do that. And I started a few weeks ago trying to set up a new account with a new shipper. And when I checked the pricing, my official account pricing hadn't gone through yet. And it was like $1,000, or more to ship this thing to Portland. And, the day or two after the student went home, I got a call from my account rep and she's like, yeah, your pricing went through. And I was like, oh, thank God, you know, can we run this quote again? And it was much, much less expensive. So, just slightly more than UPS. And I think, it'll be, you know, the chair will basically stand upright the whole time. It'll be on skids. So I think it's going to be a better process. And it's the same company that Lee Nielsen is using now. We all used to use the same shipper. And when YRC went under, they switched to Estes Freight. And they use that to ship. I think they're using it to ship their boxes of tools for the shows.
Right.
And they use it to ship workbenches, I know for sure. And so I'm giving them a shot. And so far furniture is expensive to ship. It's a really high class, freight class, and it's very low density. And so that is the one point in the article that I disagree with Chris is he says he's trying to make a crate as light as possible. They don't care. They're not, you know, the density is so low on a chair, you could probably build a crate three times heavier than it needed to be, and it would still be included in the cost of shipping that volume of
freight. Right. Because it's a volume first and then weight after scenario, right?
Yeah, with a chair, like you're the thing that you're really consuming that's valuable to them is space, because nothing is as heavy as those trucks can carry. And so you're eating up cubes inside that trailer. And so,
important is that for your a chair of that sort, you build it in a structure that could withhold heavier things on top of it, because you're not getting that's the top of the stack.
Yeah. It says do not stack in the bill of lading, but and on all labels, it's like actually printed in there, the label they give me to print.
Okay.
But that being said, yeah, I mean, it's possible something gets stacked on top, but I just don't think they have that much freight. When they're shipping, I think the trucks they're all, you know, just kind of braced against, you know, a bar, like 2/3 of the way full, one layer on the floor. Right. And you can buy little, cardboard cones to stick on the top of a box, and they put stuff on top of it, it'll crush the cone and you'll know. But I don't know, I just haven't had issues. For me, it's about making sure the chair doesn't move inside the box. That's
crucial.
You don't want any movement. You want it to be completely rigid inside the box, and that's how you keep it from getting damaged. That's kind of how I thought about loading trailers when we did a lot of trailer loading back in the day. Mm. It's like anytime you can minimize movement, you're better off.
So what are you using to brace it inside the box?
So I used a pair of braces across this from side to side, at the level of the seat, because that's the strongest part of the chair. There's maple rungs. So there's, you know, a brace behind it and a brace in front of it. And then on top, so that's kind of just below the level of the seat. And then on top of the seat, there's braces running front to back. And so those are the only challenging braces, because they're running at an angle. It's a trapezoidal seat and they're actually pressed against all four posts. And then there's another one on top of the arms just behind the front legs, so that I'm not, you know, racking the trying to break the arms in half. That pressing down right above the legs is the strongest place of the arm. If you go back, you're pressing down against a horizontal tenon, and that you could snap the tenon. So if it was really, really jarred. So, and then I, you know, wherever I was gonna put a brace, I wrapped it in like that spongy foam plastic. It's not thin, it's like 1/8 inch thick, and then wrapped cardboard around that, and you know, pressed the board against it and screwed it in from the side. You just put it right into the end grain through the plywood. It's just like 1/4 inch underlayment, nothing fancy. And I made sure that the skids went directly under the feet so that they wouldn't go through the bottom of the box. And I didn't put anything vertical, because you can't really, I mean, that you'd have to put it through the seat.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, you just have to rely on, you know, there's 1 by 1.5 inch square nailing screwing strips on all the way around all edges, corners of the box. So that offers, you know, a decent amount of rigidity and gives you something to put a screw into. So it's, the article, I mean, I braced it and built it almost exactly the way Chris does in his article. And, so you can search, you know, pack a chair or something like that on the Lost Art Press blog, and you'll see it. I just added a few extra braces, and that's about it. So packing is fun. And then I went ahead and drew the chair on the side of the box on three of the four sides. I was like, maybe if people see what's in this box, they'll be like, I don't want to smash this. That looks like a nice chair. So I just did a little sketch of a chair on the side.
What you see is inside this box.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally like if you were to take the I didn't do the front of the chair, the two sides got tired, and I, you know,
you need a big photorealistic label you can just slap on.
Well, so it's funny. I took a picture of it sitting next to the crate, and it was like the chair was casting a shadow onto the box. It was pretty funny, but cool. Except it was weird and offset and not as nice as the chair. But yeah, it's I thought about putting a bunch of notes on it, like, you know, he did a great job, or, you know, stuff like that. You know, he made this chair. You can too. Come and take a class, like silly things like that. But I ran out of time and energy. So my student's going to get a nice, you know, 2 out of 3 dimensional, or, you know, 3 out of 4 dimensional image of the chair on the side of the box.
Well, at least hopefully you put some Fragile stickers on it.
No, it's pretty, you know, the box has a flimsy feel to it, even though it's quite strong, because the plywood is really thin, and you can tell it's thin because you can see the edge. And I think that's enough. But I think the key to a box like that is to get it up off the ground. So it's hard for them to drive forks through it. You know, if it's high enough for them to get their forks underneath it, they'll be really unlikely to hit it.
Yeah.
I only worry about it falling because it's really narrow. So the only thing I worry about is it like bouncing down a road and falling off the sideways off of the forks. But I don't know. It's probably going to be okay.
Yeah, it'll be fine. And that's what insurance is for.
Yeah.
It'll update us.
Yeah. When it arrives and hopefully one piece, I'll let you know. It's going to be a few weeks. Well, it's going to be a week. So, but other than that, I'm changing gears. I'm getting ready to build a batch of shave horses. So if you want a shave horse, get in touch at, send me an email or something along those lines. How about you, Brian?
Not a whole lot in the shop. I think today is day 8 of being on the road for work. I've been all over New England. Yeah.
Okay, so where's Brian today? It's like a fun game.
Yeah. Well, my boss does that too. I'm like, he's like, what part of the country are you in? I'm like,
what?
So, dude, I'm in the Bahamas. It's vacation.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that would be nice. Up.
I'm on the beach.
I'm actually up towards like Peak Albert's place, Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts area. But I get to go home tomorrow. And before I left, I cleaned the shop. Now that the confiscated electronic bench is gone, everything is ready to go. So I'm going to.
And all you have is a card table, right?
You know, it's funny. I took down the it's the little plastic table. Sean probably is familiar with these that you'd see in like a back of like a tailgating tent.
Uh-huh.
You see them in like the back of sports setups.
The shallow one, like the 6 feet, but only too long, but only
it folds in half after the leg folds.
Exactly. So that is now my fancy electronics bench.
Wow.
Although I did take one of the perch stools that I made and it fits perfectly in there. It's the perfect height for working. So
there you go. You need to constantly remind your wife of the concession that you made. You could now be working off of a folding plastic table that you got at Costco instead of that fine piece of thing that she confiscated.
Yeah, it's the grain on that was just absolutely beautiful. Really such depth to it for the air-dried walnut.
Yeah.
But I've got some nice...
the operative word there.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how your marriage is, but my marriage is like, oh, that's great. I'll take that. Thank you. New cars.
Thanks, honey.
Yeah.
Is she the type of person to keep the desk clear enough to admire the depth of grain? Because I am not. Like, I could build the most beautiful desk, but I would never see it. It'd just be covered.
Yeah, for the most part, yes. Here's the problem, though. Like, because of her sewing business, ballet costumes, it's going to get covered in glitter, which is like total insult to injury. So I'm going to have to cry probably when I come home and see that.
You should have done a glitter epoxy finish.
Oh, yeah.
Then the glitter you wouldn't even know if it was, fresh or old.
Yeah. I mean, that glitter is in her floorboards. It's not coming out. It's all over the place.
Yeah. There forever.
It goes away.
Yeah. So my next task when I get back is to, I have this.
Is to build an electronics bench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Find another beautiful material for the top.
I have some, what looks to be some pretty nice 8-quarter cherry that I'm going to use for my actual standing desk that I screwed up the first time around. So I got to get that rolling. You know, it's not going to be any terribly fancy. It's going to be some integrated wire management, cable management for that. So you won't really see anything. And it's an adjustable height. So, push a button, it goes up, it goes down. Yeah. So I just want one cord coming down. So I'm excited for that. I need to get it out of a chair.
So it's basically like a slab type thing.
Pretty similar. Yeah. It'll have some shape to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gonna river table it up?
No. I almost, the electronics bench actually had a slight crack in the far front left side desk. Exactly. Yeah. I was like, do I just make this ridiculous and start bow tying this thing? Even though, it's going to be covered in all sorts of junk. And so I decided not to, just threw some epoxy in there, but
epoxy and glitter,
around here. And it's a Southwest thing. I know, but, before the resin got real popular, what folks were doing with these, pieces of walnut that they were doing, whatever it was, and it had like a crack in it, they were infilling that with like, I guess turquoise dust that was, in some sort of resin. Copper. I think copper too. Looked really nice. So anyway.
Well, copper, I didn't even think about that. That would have been pretty.
Copper and epoxy.
Yep.
Copper dust. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can still dig it out. Get in there.
I'll make sure I'll do that in her studio.
Anodized aluminum.
No, at this point, you'd have to fill it with glitter and epoxy.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I think true accent.
I might have to make copper glitter. Well, I guess if you, I don't know. Now I'm thinking about this, and this is kind of disgusting, but if you mix copper with glitter, you know, so it's shiny copper. I glitter haunts me. Absolutely haunts me.
You don't want that. You've already put
anybody with my stuff. Yeah. Anybody with little girls peels my paint because it never goes away. But I want to get that desk finished. It's been long overdue. And then I keep changing my plans for the pantry that I want to do. Keep adding ideas, a lot of it which requires to pull electrical around at different spots. So that's probably the next task, is to start running some wire there. But a lot of little stuff. Yeah. Sean, how about you?
In much simpler terms, when you said not much, I was going to say, oh, yeah, me too. Not much. So I just tonight had the kickoff spring sports meeting. So that means that spring sports are upon us. I'm going to be on the southern shores of Lake Erie this Saturday for 7 solid hours. And God, I hope it's not windy, because today we went from 60 degrees when I woke up. It's currently 28 degrees outside. We dropped 30 degrees in the day, and I don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of days. We live in the Midwest. It can suck.
So, did you get any storms last night?
No. Well, briefly. You know, we were supposed to get waves of it, and I heard threatening wind and possible damaging hail and all this other stuff. I was woken up to rain. I asked my son, who actually slept with his window open last night because it was in the 60s all night. He said he looked out when he was woken up, and all he could see was just a sheet of rain. But by the time I woke up, the ground was barely wet. Like, it was much less than they predicted, at least where I live. Kind of wild.
So are you doing the 7 hours of sports just merely as a parent, or are you involved in like the committee and coaching? And
I'm a parent.
You just have 7 hours of sport.
7 hours of sport. Yes. Wow. I am the team, and I have been for the last 7 years. I've been the high school statistician. After I coached a lot of the kids that are still playing when they were in youth ball. I am known to the coaches. I am known to the other parents as the guy that stands on the team sideline. And I'm not an assistant coach, but I'm there.
Board in hand.
Yeah, really a stat book in hand. But tomorrow will be, or Saturday will be my camera in hand. I get to take pictures for once instead of really paying attention and marking down every hit, ground ball, and whatever else happens.
This baseball?
No, it's lacrosse.
Oh, they have ground balls.
I know, ground ball.
They have grounders in lacrosse. Okay.
No, it's a sport where the ball should never touch the ground. And so it is a trackable stat when the ball does hit the ground. Hoop.
Oh, okay.
It's a very important thing because you can't score by rolling the ball. You have to pick it up and carry it.
Yeah, toss it. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It's a fun sport. You should watch it. It's on TV every once in a while.
I have seen something that looked like lacrosse when I passed through the channels, but I'm never really certain until I stop and
there you go.
Pay attention for a little while.
It's either lacrosse or what's the other one? Highlight or
highlight?
Like,
yeah.
Highlight is different though, because you're like in a long court.
In a court. Something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like handball.
People die like a lot.
Yeah, because those balls are going like 140 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. You got a gigantic fingernail on your hand, on your arm.
Big fingernail.
That
weirdly attached to like your forearm, not your hand. It's built in like a mech, you know, and you just got this extra mech on you. Very strange. But yeah, that's it. Weather sucks or is changing as it always does. And sports are among us. Kyle, what have you been working on?
Packing orders is what I've been doing. And what I've been doing, and what I'm still doing. So
it's ongoing. I saw you sent up the picture you put up of the bits.
Yeah.
Just the other, was that yesterday? The other day? It was recently. Yep.
That was half of them.
Was that in your shop? What you received and got prepared? Holy crap!
Yeah.
That's more than I thought. I didn't no idea you were doing that kind of capacity.
Yeah, yeah. That was 70 bits, and so I had to go through my manufacturer is having some, I think I mentioned this on the last episode, but it's having some problems, some issues getting drill blanks, you know, so that they can grind them and all that kind of stuff and cut them and grind them. And so they were only able to ship me 70 bits this time. I have almost 200 on order. So,
oh, yikes.
So anyway, so I got these first round of bits done, and basically went through and, you know, I allocated them based on, you know, who ordered first. So, you know, So I got all those things shipped out, the first 70, so to speak. And I packed up all these small orders first, and then I've been packing up the big orders. I got most of them done today. I still got a couple more to do tomorrow. What I mean by big orders is I had several folks that, you know, said, hey, give me one of everything you sell, basically, you know, and on those kind of things, which are great orders. They just take forever to pack, as you can imagine. So
I notice you have quite the material handling system in your shop. You got like big conveyors and
shelving. Well, that's the other thing. When I dropped off all the small ones the other day at my local UPS office. So it's just a small building, and it's where regional, I would guess, or city size building. But so I brought all these in, and she's like, can you help me put these on the conveyor? I went, fine. And then I went, so I helped her put them on the conveyor. And then I went, you mind if I take a picture?
Did you get a discount? You need a discount. I mean, you
yeah, like, that's labor.
He's already paid for those labels.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Anyway, she's a sweetheart that works there, and she's always there. She's the only one there, you know, so I'm happy to give her a hand. But yeah, she always takes care of me. Can't beat that. But yeah, it's like, ooh, I get to see the inner workings of the UPS office. So, but that's about it. Hopefully I'll get these last couple of orders finished up, and then I'll kind of be in a little bit of break while I'm waiting for the next batch of drill bits to arrive and get the rest of the orders shipped out. So might be back to, you know, putting that second coat of milk paint on the rocker next week. We'll see.
This year?
Yeah. Well, it's one coat a month at this point, you know.
I mean, it's
really right along.
No, you're respecting the curing time of the first.
That's right.
But you know it's well and cured and ready for the second application. Well done.
It's not going to properly cross link if you don't get those coats on fast enough. Oh, it's just no pain. No. Never mind.
Yeah, there you go. It melts it anyway. You're, you know, but if you're yourself painting your chair, we recommend a little less time.
Exactly. I would too, but you know,
you have someone who's waiting to sit in it, like get it painted.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's all that's been happening around here. So, Anthony, what's been happening in your shop?
Speaking of painting, milk paint, this chair right behind me here. It's the last chair I built with Peter Galbert, and it's sitting up there because it's getting ready to get its first coat of milk paint on there.
Cool. What color are you? Are you going to layer some colors or just solid?
Yeah, I'm going to do the traditional black over red.
Okay.
On this one.
Cool.
I have the one I built with David David Duyard that doing the green. He had a beautiful chair. It was like, it almost looked black, like inside his shop. And then when we brought it outside into the sunlight, it was just like really like deep green. So I'm going to play around with that. Not sure if I'm going to layer that one or going to just do a straight green or maybe a mustard underneath.
What's your milk paint of choice?
It was beautiful. The milk paint company.
Yeah.
Real milk paint company. Yeah.
Real milk paint company. And before that, I'm going to put together, I got this like Lazy Susan. It's like, but it's probably like, I'd say maybe probably think it's like 24, maybe 20 inches in diameter. And I got the idea from, I think, a mutual friend of ours, Kyle, Mike Pfeiffer. Woodworking. Met him first time I was up at Peter Galbert's. So we were in the class together. He's a great guy. And
he's on our next round of guests. We're going to have him on. So, yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. Great. Oh, wow. That's awesome. He's such a great guy. We became friends. I just spoke with him like 2 days ago, actually. And he made this like little Lazy Susan that he puts the chair up. So I think since my bench is up against the wall, it'll be a lot easier. So I'm going to put that together first. Now that the weather's warmed up a little bit here in New Jersey, feels like good temperature for painting. So that's the one project I have going on. The next chair that I'm going to build, I'm actually going to do a buddy build with a friend of mine that he was actually a chef also at Meta that does some woodworking. He left in May, and we're going to do the Gibson chair together. So,
oh, cool. Well, that's great. Well, before I delve into a little bit more details about what's going on with you, for our new listeners who might not have been around when you were last on, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up and how you got into woodworking and chair making.
Yeah. Great. So yeah, I grew up in Newark, New Jersey. And I guess, you know, woodworking's always been around. I've always been around it. My dad was in law enforcement, but he was a hobbyist woodworker, and he built a lot of furniture, built some really great stuff. And my mom's uncles that lived only a few blocks away from us, one was a woodworker. That was his profession. And he had this amazing shop set up and on top of a 5 or 6 car garage. And the above it, he had all his machinery and planers.
Above it.
And wow. they made amazing things with furniture, anything from furniture to little toys for us when we were young. So I know when I used to help out my dad when I was younger, and we were renovating the attic of our house that I grew up in, and we lifted up all the floorboards. The house was built like in mid 1800s, and lifted up all these beautiful floorboards, and we took them over there to plane them down, and it was just amazing seeing those, just these black boards turn into this amazing, all this beautiful green old wood. And then my dad, I think he like varnished it, oiled it or something, just looked beautiful. It was a beautiful old floor, really wide planks. So I was always pretty much around woodworking growing up. We'd play around in my dad's shop. He'd give me little projects when I was really small. I'd, you know, hammer nails in little pieces of wood for him, made like little sailboats and stuff. As I got older, I'd help him out a little bit more. And then, you know, you kind of like drift away from your dad and you go on your own. But he always had that little shop in our basement. That was it was always a cool place to go hang out and go check out all the old stuff. Actually, a lot of these tools that are behind me came out of his shop. A bunch of it were his. So,
including the Walker Turner drill press you have behind you?
No, that I picked up on my own. That is a very early, probably 50s, maybe even the 40s. I think it's actually a 49, 1949. I really love everything kind of, it's been made in New Jersey. So I was like, I have to have that. So I bought that from a local guy that was selling it, and fixed it up. I took it all apart, cleaned it up. And got it going nice. And it's working beautiful.
I don't know much about New Jersey. The only thing I know is I should ask you what exit you're on.
That's right.
That's right. 117, and that's not funny. So after that, you know, went to school, kind of followed in my dad's footsteps a little bit. I went into law enforcement. I'm a former police officer in Newark. I was a detective. I worked in the vice squad, and majority of the time in my career there, I worked in narcotics. And then I was a homicide detective for a little bit. And then after the police department is when I decided to go into cooking. And I just was hanging out for a little while. I went down to Florida. I was hanging out with a friend of mine that had moved down there. And one day I woke up and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to culinary school. Came back up to New Jersey, signed up for a school in New York City, went to culinary school for 2 years, graduated. Now, obviously, I was a little bit of a late starter being a second career guy. So I wanted to fast track my career. So I looked to work at the best places I possibly could. My first job was for a pretty famous chef. His name is Michel Nichon. He opened up a very popular restaurant. It was called Heartbeat back in the day. It was like the first very high-end, no cream, no butter concept. So doing really fancy food, but on a sort of a healthy kind of twist to it. It was just hugely popular. It was in the first W hotel ever, which was at Lexington and 49th Street. Now, you know, they're all over the world, but yeah, I worked in the first one ever.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I've noticed that about some of, you know, some of your postings and stuff. You tend to gravitate towards making more of the healthy type meals and stuff like that. Yeah. It seems to be something that you know, inspires you, I guess, from back in the day, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of always, I guess my culinary career kind of followed that path of sort of like very plant forward foods. It's what I like to call it. So yeah, I do a lot of plant forward cooking. I use a lot of fruits and vegetables and as components of the dish.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. Cause we watch a lot of the PBS Create TV here and they have all the chefs on there. Yeah, and it's good. Oh, but yeah, it's like cream, butter, white wine. Yes. Cream, butter, white
wine. Yeah. Yeah, and then after that, I went off to really like jumpstart my career. I said, I want to get some kind of European experience. So I was looking at France. I was going to maybe go do what we call a stage. It's sort of like an apprenticeship, small apprenticeship at a restaurant. But I ended up in this beautiful little restaurant, a villa in the south of Portugal. It was on the cliffs overlooking the water. It had 2 Michelin stars, 3 is the tops you could you can get for a restaurant there in the Michelin system. It was at the time the only restaurant in the whole country that had any stars. So this had 2, and it was just an amazing place. We would go pick like bay leaves off the trees on the side of the cliffs to use in the recipes. The fish were coming in from the ocean every day. We changed the menu, would get written the night before. So it would just, wouldn't know until that night what we're going to be cooking the next day, because it was all dependent on what ingredients we got in during the day. It was super hyper local, super fresh, everything done to like the top techniques you can possibly use in cooking. And that's why they have 2 Michelin stars. So it was rated one of the best restaurants in the world. I think it was like number 35 back in the day. So
are they still in business?
Yeah. Strong. Yeah. Thriving. And it's a beautiful place. Definitely a destination. So I spent probably about 6 months there before coming back to New York, and that was in 2001. So I got back in August, and then obviously September we had 9/11 happened, so everything kind of got thrown on its head for a while. But then I landed at another place that was also made the list of one of the best restaurants in the world, 11 Madison Park. And so I got hired there as a sous chef, and I was overseeing their private dining room. I stayed there for about 2 years. I was at 11 Madison Park for about 3 years as a sous chef. And that was an amazing experience also, just being in one of the top restaurants. It's probably one of the top restaurants in New York City for sure, but probably one of the tops in the country at the time as well. And always a lot of action, a lot of people coming in, a lot of stars. We hosted the Academy Awards one day, and we just had actors and actresses walking through the kitchen and just, you know, all these crazy antics that would go on in the kitchens. So it was a lot of fun, and it was an incredible learning experience. I did a little bit of teaching afterwards in some of the culinary schools, and then I was hired as the executive chef of this new concept called SPE, which stood for Sanitas Per Escum, which is Latin for health through food. And there we were like a consulting company where I would work with a nutritionist, and we would go in and revamp menus to make them a little healthier. So a couple of our big clients was like UMass Amherst, where they serve 40,000 meals a day. We went there. I redid their menu, our company. I was the cooking component of it, teaching their chefs how to do this new food. We also did a celebrity cruise line, which was a ton of fun. I got to spend 2 weeks out at sea, in the depths of that one, in the depths of a cruise ship. A lot different than as a guest up top, but it was a lot of fun as well. And then we did some other really cool projects. I got to work with some doctors. I know Brian, if any of them familiar, WebMD, Dr. Pam Peek. I believe she originated WebMD, but she was on this team that we went out to California. We were in Malibu, and we were doing sort of a research project on the effects of nutrition on addiction recovery. Mm. So we were at a really high-end center in Malibu, and we kind of just went in, and instead of like a typical AA meetings, which is the way it used to be. We had coffee and donuts in the back of the room. We switched it out for like spa waters and, you know, fresh fruit and all these, you know, really creative, healthy snacks that are very high-end clientele there. So, you know, we did some really fine food, but it was a lot of like fruits and vegetables instead of, you know, sugar and stuff. And a lot of interesting research came out of that. And they actually proved that nutrition definitely has an effect on how fast you can recover and break the cycle of addiction. So that was
fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I ended up after that. That's when I came on board about 9 years ago at Meta. Back then it was still Facebook. And we opened up the first New York City building. And yeah, we started, I think we were feeding like 300, doing about 300 people a day. Now we're up to about 7,500 amongst three buildings. We have about, I want to say, 14 concepts, different dining concepts in New York right now, and a culinary staff of about 260.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you're telling me that all you get all day is bad news.
Fires.
That's it.
Putting out fires all day long.
Yeah, went from being a cop to a fireman now. So that's part of the culinary career, but I know this is a woodworking podcast, so let's get back into the woodworking, right?
Well, no, that's fantastic. Well, before we leave that, I think you want to promote a new venture that you have going on as a chef-inspired wood project business. Tell me a little bit about that.
All right. So last year, one of our chefs out in the Pacific Northwest, his name is John Langley. He has this side business of, he makes planter boxes, like cedar planter boxes. And so he was friends with one of the chefs out here in New York, this one chef, Andy May, that had left last May, that I'm going to be doing the kitchen with. And he got Andy to do it on the East Coast, I guess, build these planter boxes. And he was getting a lot of, he was in New York, upstate New York, and he was getting a lot of calls from people in New Jersey. And he's like, "Hey, you got a wood shop? You want to help me build these boxes?" I was like, "You know, it's not really my thing, but yeah, sure, I can." It sounds, you know, simple enough. We can throw some boxes together. So threw some of these boxes together, and I was actually surprised, still astonished at how many we sold. Sold about, like, I want to say close to like $7,000 worth of cedar boxes in about 2 months last spring.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy. Wow. Yeah. Insane. So it kind of got the wheels turning, and I want to do something, you know, a nice little side business that I can, you know, run out of my small garage wood shop here. And I wanted to combine my experience as a chef. You know, obviously I would love to just do Windsor chairs, but Kyle, you know how long it takes to make a Windsor chair, right?
right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Like 9 years.
Your three-year rocker going on.
Yeah. Well, let me also warn you about side businesses too.
Got a little experience there.
I think I'll be calling you on the side after this this recording. But
yeah. Because I was, just easing into my retirement. Went, wait a minute, I can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look at me now. I don't have enough going on much, but anyway, it's, you know, it's a little bit of a passion project. I'd also last spring, I don't even know why, but I bought a laser engraver and used it for my wife's business. My wife runs a beauty parlor, so we were engraving like brushes, you know, with the logos and doing a couple things for and stuff. So this past Christmas, I wanted to give some of the guys I work with, some of the chefs that work with me, a gift. So I put some boards together and engraved everybody's name, Chef So-and-so, Chef So-and-so, and gave them these at around Christmas time. And they were like, they went bananas over it. They were like, "This is great. I can't believe you should make these. My mom wants one of these now for her dad." And, you know, everybody wanted one of these. And they showed, you know, the population of people that work in Facebook and started getting a lot of requests for it. So that kind of gave me the idea of doing some kind of chef inspired business. I don't want to just do boards. I want to do something bigger. So I was kind of designing this. My thought came about to, since I was doing some stuff for the outside, some planter boxes already, I want to keep with the outdoor theme, and started like this company called Yardworks. So that's something I'm going to be starting probably next month. It's going to kick off. And I wanted to do this chair I designed. It's not a Windsor chair, but it's sort of almost like, I want to say probably more reflective of a director's chair, where kind of, I'm going to call it like the pit master chair. And okay, it's going to have like, you know, things where you can put a drink, you can maybe if you want, like a, you know, a cigar ashtray, and places to hang your grilling tools from as you're out there and sit down as sort of like the king of the grill.
That's a great idea.
All of the chef inspired stuff. You know, and with that, a couple other things, anything kind of that can correlate to food and woodworking, which there is a lot besides, even other than boards. I mean, if you want like picnic tables, you can really, you know, the picnic table can really be a, you know, related to food. So, that's sort of where I'm going with this, but it's more of a kind of, I'm scared, like you're saying, Kyle, about side businesses. I almost want to build a bit, but I don't want it to be too busy.
Charge a lot of money.
Charge a lot of money.
That's how you keep from getting too busy. Charge $1 million. Yeah, at least like 3 or 4 times more than you think you should. And if you're still too busy, then you need to be double that. Because, there's no better way to steal your joy away than, you know, get really busy doing 100 things, you know, the same thing 100 times instead of, you know, indulging yourself in building whatever you feel like 100 different things. Yeah.
You can enjoy the pain in my shoulder and in my elbow from ripping packing tape off my dispenser.
You need one of those, like you punch in a number, it just measures the tape and hands it to you.
Oh, there's so much stuff. If I had this volume of orders all the time, I'd be buying all kinds of
ship, a lot of
supplies and stuff. But yeah,
a lot of let me send all the profit you're about to make. I'll help you.
So I thought, you know, with the experience and you know, the chef career and related to woodworking, probably works better than the relating a police career to woodworking. I don't know what that would look like.
Yes.
Sure, no, make a lot of batons. Whole lot of batons. Nightsticks.
Right. Then freeze. Drop the fest tool domino. Let me see your hands.
So I need to take this in for evidence.
Right. So that's where I'm at right now. So it's been a great journey though. It's I think so. I'm going to look at chair making. So the Windsor chairs as sort of, that's going to be my side hobby now.
Okay. Gotcha. Oh, well, good luck. Well, tell us a little bit about some of your chair making adventures. So you mentioned you took a class with David and Pete, and what else have you been doing?
Yes. Yeah. So, David was the first, I built my first chair, you know, with no class. I had zero class. But it was after picking up, learning really about Lost Art Press. When I discovered Lost Art Press over the pandemic, I was, it's when the pandemic first started, I would, you know, we were all sent home, and I was just reading, and I was still building the shop here, fixing it up. I was like, now I had some more time to fix it up. So got more, a little more into it. But in the meantime, just enjoyed reading. I kind of read a lot of the books that I wanted to read. I liked stories about people and their journey. I didn't really want to read technique books anymore. So I came across Chris Williams' book, and I was like, it's a chair book. I'm like, I don't know if I'm, you know, going to enjoy it, but it's about a guy, and he's talking about this guy, John Brown. Let me see what this is all about. So I ordered that book, got it. I read it, and I was just, that's it. I was hooked. I couldn't get enough. I just wanted to read more about John Brown. I wanted to read more about chairs. And I started doing some more research. And I think I told the story the last time. It's when I came across Pete Galbert's name. And I didn't even know who Pete Galbert was at the time yet. And I was like, well, you know, this woodworking is such a small niche. How big can it be? So I wrote him, and then I was talking, asking him about a draw knife, where I can get a draw knife. I couldn't find a company that made draw knives, and I wanted a draw knife. And he's like, yeah, you get old ones. So got some old ones, and we went back and forth a little bit. We emailed him, and he's like, you know what? He's like, you got some, you know, some old draw knives. Send them up to me, and I'll sharpen them up for you. And I was like, really? Okay. So I sent them my two draw knives, and it's actually my draw knives are the ones he's using in his Vimeo series, or my knives. So
how to sharpen ones? Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So it's like after during this time, while he had my knives, and he told me he was gonna be filming this video series, if I didn't mind, he's gonna use my knives in it. And I'm like, yeah, great, go ahead, do it, knock yourself out. He sent these two draw knives back. So one I haven't touched; it's still wrapped with his handwritten letter. I think Sean, you're the one that told me to make a shadow box for it and play it. Uh-huh. Yeah. The other one's hanging on the wall behind me that I've used. I used plenty, and so that was fun. But then after knowing who he was, I was like, yeah, definitely gotta take a class with him. So my first chair, going back to the question, was a Welsh stick chair that I built after reading the books from Chris Schwarz. And then just being into it, I was like, okay, you know, this is the next evolution. Nothing really else written about stick chairs is the cousin, the Windsor chair. So, started doing a lot of reading on the Windsor chair. I was looking for someone in New Jersey that would teach a class. Couldn't find anybody in New Jersey to teach a class. I even wrote Curtis Buchanan. And he gave me a couple. He's like, nah, I don't really have anybody in New Jersey, but he's like, here, these are two guys. He gave me Andy Glenn, I think is in Connecticut.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he is now. Yeah.
And yeah.
Oh, he's by, so, no, Andy Glenn's back up in Maine.
He's back up in Maine. Okay. So and then I saw that David Duyard was doing a class at in Connecticut, the school, the Valley, Connecticut.
Oh yeah.
Valley School of Woodworking. Yeah. And so I signed up for that class with him. It was still during, like, I guess it was 2020, 21 maybe, or 20. And the class got canceled, I think, because of COVID again. And David reached out to me, and he's like, hey, you're like the only one that didn't cancel. He's like, if you want, he's like, I'm not too far from the school. You want to come up to my shop and we'll do the class. I'll just do it. So I was like, yeah, great. That'd be awesome. And so I went up to his house and his home shop and spent a week there with just me and David doing this chair together. It was great. It was a sack back chair. And it was so nice. I met his wife. It was just the three of us up there. It was, you know, still pandemic, still a bunch of stuff closed down. And just that's how I got pretty close to David. And I've bothered him a lot over the past couple of years with questions. How do I do this? Or what did you use for this?
He's a great resource. I still bother him all the time, too.
He's such a great guy.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he's so awesome. And then when Chris Schwarz was releasing the stick chair book, reached out to him. We still weren't back to work full time, and talked to him about doing a book release party. And so we went back and forth. He was real excited about it. It's like, I don't know when the book's going to come out. It's like stuck in, you know, we have supply chain issues.
I remember that.
I wrote a menu. It was a really cool menu. Very themed out. Everything had to do with chairs and chair making. I'll send it to you guys. It's a pretty cool menu. Chris.
Oh yeah, like, I'd like to. I put it in the podcast description. So
okay,
that'd be fun. We'll
look at it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll send it to you tomorrow morning. So Chris, he loved it. He loved the idea. He says, I don't know when this is going to be, but this is awesome. He's like, listen, thank you for offering this, but you know, I definitely want to repay you. He said, if you want to take a class, you know, here, I'll put you in a class for free. Now it's like the class didn't work out where, you know, at the time, the timing was wrong. And then the chair book was delayed like a couple, like two or three times it was delayed its release. So we never got to do it. We remain kind of like pen pals. he's on the Christmas card.
We appreciate the Christmas cards.
So impressive.
Brian made it this year. So
I did. Yeah, felt important.
and through Chris also, I also befriended his two buddies in Europe, Ozan and Klaus.
Swiss chair guys.
Yeah. And Klaus does the wood carvings.
Yeah.
So those guys are pretty. They're funny. They write me on Instagram, and I think Klaus just wrote me today. Actually, always with some like funny stuff.
Yeah, so. No, they're great. We had them on years ago. We should probably try to get those guys back on.
Yeah. So then, did the class with David, and then since then, I signed up for a class with Pete, and I took comb back behind me built with Pete. And then after that, I did a short class. I did the wood turning intensive that he offers. It's like a weekend long. So I went up there and we did a lot of turning. It was all lathe work, which was nice.
So are you pretty good with the skew now?
Yeah, I'm not too bad with the skew.
Okay, I got some stuff I need to send you.
And I'm not scared of it. Yeah. So yeah, send it up. And I love it. I love my lathe. I picked up an old like 1950s. It's from England. It's a Myford ML8. And it's beautiful. I think I paid like $600 for it. And it looks very like from the 50s when they did a lot of like space inspired. Thing. It looks kind of like it's a futuristic, very mid-century modern kind of thing, but it's what works great. Yeah, put a couple drops of 3-in-1 oil and it's ready to go.
Oh, fantastic.
That's pretty cool.
Well based on all this, so what would you say from your chair making adventures and all that stuff, your favorite technique or process that you've learned?
I think my favorite technique for, you know, when it comes to chairs, is still it still amazes me when you break down a log and a green log, shape it on the shave horse, and then the steam bed. It's like that whole process is just to me. It's so beautiful that you can really bend wood into, you know, these beautiful shapes, and especially like you do a continuous arm where you have like the two different bends going on. I think that's just so cool. And, you know, and just the fact that you take a tree and, you know, in pretty much in a week, it could be a week or 3 years. Yeah. It could look like this.
It is cool. But the pucker factor goes way up on those continuous arms when you're doing the bend.
That one's tricky. But I don't know if you saw Davis post this morning. What they're bending over there, like the Australian, like Blackwood, I think it's called. Blackwood. That looks that's scary. It looks like it snaps. It's going to be like a harpoon coming through you.
Yeah. The woods they work with and how they're able to work them, it's amazing. But, you know, steam bending's been around for centuries. And I think in our line, it's kind of a rediscovered art, but I think in some areas it's not. I mean, there's some guys doing some incredible stuff with steam. But that is cool. So do you have a steam box and a kiln?
I do. Yeah. I have a steam box. I actually built a kiln out of a stainless steel prep table.
Oh, that's nice.
Nice. So it's cool. I had one left over from when we had a restaurant, and I took the top off. I did a plywood top, and I did the foam insulation as the sides. I put in some two culinary little wire racks inside, and I actually, for the light bulb, it's the bulbs we use to heat the food on what we call the pass.
Exactly.
There you go. I mean, it's kind of reconfiguring the whole assembly thing into an internal thing instead of an external, right?
Yes.
And use all kitchen parts to build it.
Yeah. You have access to the heat lamp. Yes. Well, what's your Steam box?
My Steam box is a plywood box.
Okay.
Yeah, right behind me. I use the
you got a little sous vide mixer going to get the water hot.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Yeah.
To control the
industrial sous vide. Right. You just dunk the wood in there and just let it cook. Right. Yeah.
You can cook a steak and steam some parts at the same time.
I do it with hard boiled eggs all the time.
How
big is, you know, your standard kitchen sous vide? You know,
we use we call it a Lexan. It's a big, like, kind of plastic.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not super huge. I think it's we use like a 36 quart, which ends up being probably, I want to say, maybe about two feet, maybe 24 inches long, and by maybe like 18 inches wide, and it's pretty kind of deep. So that's where we usually hang the sous vide, the immersion circulator over the side.
Okay. Know? Yeah. Yeah. I have one of those too, but it's more the home ones and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Works really good for keeping high glue at the right temperature.
I can't get over cooking stuff in a plastic bag. That's what keeps me away from sous vide.
What?
Cooking things in a plastic bag.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's the temperature is so low that I don't think it denigrates the plastic, and so it doesn't therefore like leach any of the harmful stuff into the food.
Like you're cooking a steak to completion cooler than you would microwave anything.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm sure somebody has done the research to tell me I'm worrying about nothing. But, I haven't had the time to go look it up yet.
You're worrying about nothing, but
it looks like a really awesome.
It works really great.
Very controlled.
Yeah.
It takes longer, but it is really, really
good. Yeah. I know a lot of people use it for like steaks and stuff. But yeah. I just can't get over, you know, I'd rather just do it on the grill.
You can do the center just right, and then you just sear it. You can put it on the grill after.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You
broil
can.
It,
you can.
Throw it under the broiler real quick.
Yeah, just real quick. Yeah. I've done like carrots, and they were the best, like better than steamed carrots. They were carrots done perfectly. It's a great way to cook.
Yeah. We do the carrots. I use it more for vegetables than I do for like the meats and stuff. And so we sous vide, we vacuum pack, you know, and whatever we're going to do. We do the carrots in carrot juice. And so that intensifies the carrot flavor.
Sure.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yep.
All this has to go into the MWA cookbook that we're going to make.
Yeah.
I'm working on
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Working on it.
Being that I'm the resident chef.
Well, he's going to send, you know, a menu list here, you know.
And, yeah, we're going to send the menu tomorrow. Yeah.
I think we need MWA cooking special.
I think we could have the MWA like food stand at the Texas Woodworking Festival. This is where this is headed. I can see it now.
Funny you should mention that.
Handworks, right?
Yeah. I am on the board of that. We were just going over food trucks we want to have invited. So I'll put us down if you want to.
Yeah, that's right.
We had a full kitchen at Handworks. We could have done this. We could have had could have done a test cooking.
Yes.
Back to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to start a NWA food truck, please contact us.
Donate $50,000.
Yeah.
We'd have to redo the truck in wood. It's got to be a wood exterior. Right.
Yeah, it's got
to
be all wood exterior. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think an old trolley would be fitting. Just, you know,
maybe like
not painted red,
wagon.
But just a pretty nice a Wenge exterior. I mean,
don't rub up against it.
Don't slide up against it. But it'll look good from a distance.
Okay.
That was weird.
Well, move. Well, so Anthony, moving back to our podcast, our woodworking podcast. So Anthony, tell us about your shop. So you made a few updates since we last spoke.
Yeah, there's a few updates. I think my next serious update has to be dust collection. So I have none. So now that I've got some more stuff going on here, I'm definitely looking into some dust collection. So confusing, everything. Yes. Out there, I've just been like the whole past month just every day looking at videos and reading. And we had the woodworking show here in New Jersey last week, and so Oneida was there, so we got to talk to some people from there.
Did you see Wilbur there?
Yeah, Wilbur was with
me.
Yep. So Yeah, I told Wilbur I'm gonna donate my appearance to him so we could beat Brian Brazil.
I don't know if we allow
not
that.
Transferable.
Yeah, I'm not transferable.
The Jersey boys are gonna take this. I'm telling you.
Hey, he's from Chicago. He's a Jersey transplant.
We've adopted him.
All right,
as far as now. So yeah, Wilbur was there. He was also at the holiday party, which I cater now. I've been volunteering.
Oh, that's awesome.
Our Central Jersey Woodworkers Association holiday party. It's always a lot of fun. But the other thing that's pretty cool in my shop, I have an old Hitachi jointer planer, and there was a problem with it. I plug it in, and it would turn on, like problem with the switch. So I was kind of hesitant. I'm not really into electric work. But finally, I got up the nerve to let me just take this thing apart. Took it apart, found out that the switch that was on it wasn't even connected to the wiring, which is really strange. I ordered a new switch anyway, even though this one worked. I just wired it up so it worked. But I took the blades, and I was almost tempted to try to sharpen them myself, but I didn't. And I was looking around, and I sent them out to Ridge Carbide. And they were in New Jersey, but now they're somewhere in the Midwest. I don't know where. But I was really blown away by the level of service that they provided. They sent back the blades. They were like coated in this like green kind of rubber plastic kind of stuff, like just at the end, just the tip of the blade. So, you know, for safety. But they had engraved my name on them, which I thought it was like amazing. Like I got these beautiful jointer planer blades with my Anthony Marias on it. I was really blown away by their customer service. Really cool. It wasn't too expensive either. And now I have pretty much a brand new jointer planer. I would say it's Hitachi. It's probably from the 90s, I would say.
Fantastic. And that just reminds me that I, you know, totally mispronounced your name at the front. So anyway, I think I said Marias and you just said Marias.
It's one of those things. I have people in my family that say Marias.
Okay.
Some say Marias. Yeah, it's fine. Okay. Morays. I have another cousin just says Morays. Yeah.
Morays?
A lot of vowels. Too many vowels. You need more. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, so tell us a little bit. I think we already talked about you being a chef at Meta, but I did want to ask you a little bit about what's your go-to dinner on or lunch entree?
I do a lot of food research for my job, actually, some food trends and all that. So last week I was researching last request meals of like death row prisoners. And this podcast just super dark turn.
So these are the healthy meals. Okay. Yes.
No, because I was thinking like, what would be my last meal? And and I don't think it would be like a steak or a lobster or anything. So it's kind of like the way, as you know, going back to the question of what's my go-to lunch or dinner entree. I think I look more not for a specific food, but when if I go to a restaurant, like a technique or a combination of ingredients that sound interesting to me. So it could be chicken, could be, you know, pork chop, it could be a steak, or it could be a pasta dish, but something that sounds interesting, sounds like the kitchen took their time or put some effort into it. And that's probably what I would go for. If I'm home, I'm usually taking requests from my kids that are 6 and 8, my little guys that live here. still, and it's usually peanut butter and jelly.
I was gonna say those are simple staples, right?
Nothing wrong with that. I love peanut butter and jelly. I actually once wrote like a 3-page dissertation on the perfect PB&J sandwich.
Hits you.
Oh, that needs to be in the notes too.
Yeah, I need to say that.
Yeah.
What is like multi Michelin star chef's take on peanut butter and jelly? I need to know this.
I just baked 2 loaves of bread, so I mean they're calling out for peanut butter and jelly.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, the perfect peanut butter and jelly sandwich kind of has to harken back to like nostalgia of what you ate, you know, and what you're used to eating. So I definitely, my number one pick for the jelly would be grape.
And I was going to say grape is old, but I prefer strawberry.
Prefer like, strawberry. See, that's not,
but
not
in my favorite. In my older days, I don't know that my parents honestly could afford anything but grape back in the day.
Yeah.
But that's all we had. So I have the nostalgia for it, but it's changed.
Grape. We don't do grape at Facebook right now. We have raspberry. So I like raspberry also, but grape, smooth peanut butter, not crunchy. Very fresh, sliced bread, white bread, not wheat bread. And then it's the technique of building it. You know, you have to spread the peanut butter has to be spread perfectly around to the edges. Only if you're going to eat it later, then you have to protect.
Oh yeah, because that keeps it soggy.
You have to take that into consideration as the timing of consumption.
Do you toast the bread?
I don't toast. I've had it toasted, but no, my perfect one is not toasted. And then you have to take the peanut butter knife that you just spread the peanut butter on one side and kind of clean it off on the other side, so you have a little bit of peanut butter on the bread. And then you take the jelly with the same knife. And then it's like, has to be sort of a certain plate also. Can't have a high ridge because you have to kind of evenly spread. And if you have a slight cant, you won't get an even spread. So almost like a shaving of a board. It's got to be at a perfect angle. there's a lot that goes into a simple sandwich.
Yeah. Into the mind of a chef. How about that?
Well, with that, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices. So I was at the store today looking at beers and going, okay, what should I get? What should I get? And I really just wanted something, a nice light lager. And so I chose Dos Equis. So anyway,
Good choice.
It goes down well and it's fantastic. Do
you do the lime though?
No.
Good for you. They should never have marketed that with a lime. Why don't they just make
it? Mm-hmm. Exactly. But with that, Brian, what are you drinking? I know you're drinking something a little bit more special.
Well, since I'm up in the land of good beer in the Northeast here, Alchemist Brewing will not ship to Pennsylvania. So I was at a grocery store in Bristol, Vermont, and they had pretty nice beer selection, but on their end cap, they had some really nice stuff. Alchemist, Lawson's, Frost, a lot of good stuff. So I picked up a 4-pack of Focal Banger and a 4-pack of Heady Topper, that's about as much beer as I can fit in my suitcase coming home. So chill down and open up a Focal Banger tonight. If you can get your hands on it, it's good stuff.
I've heard of Heady Topper. I've not heard of Focal Banger.
It's an IPA. 7%, I think is the, excuse me. 7%. It's a little more hoppy than Heady Topper, but either of them are fantastic. So if you can get them in your part of the country, by all means, that would be my suggestion. But Sean, how about you?
You should drive next time.
I've done that. I brought, I've plenty of room to bring beer back. That's when your neighbors start calling you. Hey, I hear you're going to Maine.
Yeah. Be careful of that. So I have a local brew, it's actually a local brew pub of a former, I think he was a Miami Dolphins kicker, back in the day. And so the brewery is called Inside the Five, which is like, or the punters, I guess that's the punters call. It's like, they want to always punt get Inside the Five. So it's Inside the Five. It's just down the street from us actually. But they started up microbrew inside the restaurant. And this is a s'mores style stout, as they call it You're Killing Me S'mores. And it's a fun little graphic on the can. But it's basically a chocolate with a little like sweet milk. I won't say marshmallow, but like that idea of a s'more, in a stout. So it's a too sweet stout for my liking, but, I like to support the local guys and, it's interesting.
So you don't remember who the name of the punter is?
I don't. He wasn't anyone like incredibly famous. I think he had a brief career. I can find out for you.
Oh, okay.
Beer, Kyle.
Well, if he was on the Browns, he wouldn't be famous.
No. He wasn't the Browns. he was, I want to say he was from Miami and he went to Michigan State. I know he kicked from Michigan State and then went to, I believe it was the Dolphins. And Brandon it was just the story Fields? Of, Brandon Field. Yes, you're absolutely right. Brandon Field. Anybody a fan of Brandon Field?
Yeah, I was just Googling. I was just wondering because the Dolphins had some punter. I forgot what his name was. But anyway, he was this huge guy, and it was like you did not want to tackle this guy. You know, you didn't want to try to block the punt because this guy was so big. And it's like he took like one step and would just like bang it. But this is like during the 80s, so...
this guy's not quite that old. I mean, he's
He said he was seventh round of the 2007 draft. So
hey, man, but he got drafted. Mm-hmm. We give him credit. Yeah, yep. He was.
Well, there was a Super Bowl quarterback who got drafted last this year.
Yeah, so. Absolutely, Mr. Irrelevant made it to the Super Bowl. How about that? No, this guy. I mean, he's from the area. He went to a local private high school and then went to Michigan State and then the draft. And hey, Tom Brady was drafted late too. So doesn't matter where you get drafted, you might just crack open.
Reggie Roby was the guy I was talking about.
Okay. Yeah, but this guy, he was in the league for eight years. He transferred to the Saints after. But now he's been 6 years since he opened the restaurant, and they just this year opened their third establishment. It's more of a tap house with food truck schedule rather than even the restaurant running. And they're really doing well. It's very local to my area, but I'm really proud of them. It's good stuff.
Cool. Wow. And Roger Roby's no longer with us. Wow.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah, he died in 2005, born in 1961. Wow.
That was a long time. Kyle, you're older than us. You remember football players before I was born.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So anyway.
So Mark. Yeah, but he wasn't that old. So anyway. On that sweet note, Mark, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Boulevard Brewing Company Tank 7. American Saison Ale. Nice floral, tasty beer.
Mm-hmm. I like a good Saison.
How about you, Anthony?
I'm speaking of peanut butter. I'm drinking something called Choosy Moms, and it's a
Choose Jif.
Nice, that's funny. Awesome.
and it's painted like a Jif can. The Jif.
It is.
It's very cool. It's called Choosy
Moms.
Who
brews that?
It's from Black Hog Brewing Company, and they're in Oxford, Connecticut. And it's an imperial stout brewed with peanut butter, and it's mighty tasty.
Does it? Yeah. Does it come through? Does the peanut butter come through?
It does. Yeah. It's very peanutty. And I think it goes well with the stout.
Mm-hmm.
Just think of eating a peanut butter sandwich with like drinking a Guinness or something. It's like
it's like you put your peanut butter in my stout. You put my stout, your stout in my peanut butter kind of scenario. I love that. I love a good quirky name too.
Choosy Moms.
That's a really brilliant way so to cool. reference.
That's GIF. Smart.
Yeah, it's pretty smart.
And it gives you like that 80s nostalgia because that's when that commercial was out, right? Maybe early 90s, but like,
yep.
Yeah, that's good. Back to your smooth peanut butter.
we didn't talk about it, but we just got some honey off of the roofs of Facebook in New York City. From our bees up there. I know we didn't. This is usually a woodworking and bee podcast.
It is.
Sean's are all dead. So.
They're all
mine
dead or
mine have died. I do have some frames I need to spin, though. Sad. I do have honey I can get. We've
kept ours alive in New York City.
That's phenomenal. On the roof, too.
On the roof. And so I'm going to send you guys each a jar of honey.
Oh, you're kidding.
Awesome. Oh, nice.
Oh, Chef,
thank you so much.
Thank you. That's awesome. You. I think that is... I love hearing about that stuff, especially what you're doing in like what is almost not necessarily a commercial space, but it's a big city like a compared desert. It's an urban desert. I live on 3/4 acre. You are operating on top of a skyscraper. Yep. Like, these are two very, very different things. That is so cool. Love that.
Yeah. You know, well, those are obviously New York bees too, because
don't mess with those bees. They will gut you.
Imagine how far they have to fly to get some nectar.
I know. Anyway. Yeah, their foraging has to be wild. Like, I mean, are there a lot of other rooftop?
They're drinking soda out of empty Coke cans, man.
Yeah, those are Yellow Jackets. Those are
Mountain Dew and Coca-Cola bees right there.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to the honey, that's for sure.
I know. I'm excited. Yeah.
It's really sweet.
Let me know how it tastes, Sean, compared to the Midwest honey.
Yeah, for sure.
You guys, you've probably talked about this before, but do you guys have a garden on the roof for them? Because there's a lot of rooftop plants in New York, right?
Yeah, we do have a small garden. I don't think it's enough, though.
What floor? How many floors?
That building is on the 19th story.
It's pretty high. So
we're pretty high up.
It's up there.
Yeah. But we're not terribly far from Central Park, which is, you know, it's pretty huge. A lot of flowers. Yeah. A lot of little parks in New York. So
is it? I mean, this is February. I mean, is this honey from the fall or?
Yes. Yeah. It's this.
Okay. You had the last batch.
Yeah, we got from the fall.
Okay. Okay. You waited to see to make sure they had enough food for the winter, and then you pulled some frames or.
Yeah. Well, okay. we have a beekeeper that comes in and she does all that.
She's in charge.
She's in charge. She comes from Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, you know, might give her, you know, give her Sean's email address.
Yeah, maybe she can help me out.
So I'm sure that's what she wants to do.
Consult another novelist, beekeeper.
Well, so the internet's absolutely fantastic for doing things like Googling obscure dolphins punters. But besides that, it's also good to find us. So where can folks find you on the internet, Anthony?
Chef Marias on Instagram, or Anthony Marias on Facebook.
Fantastic. Mark, what about yourself?
You can find me at Mark Builds It on Instagram, or you can find my YouTube channel at The Joint Effort, or you can subscribe to my weekly newsletter. Get a free video every week at jointeffort.net/MWA. How about you, Brian?
Instagram is the place that you can find me. Excuse me. And that is just simply Obst Woodworks, which is OBST. Kyle, how about you?
You can always find me on Instagram at barton.kyle or BB Custom Tools, bbcustomtools.com, or on YouTube under BB Custom Tools or Kyle Barton. Sean, what about yourself?
As usual, you can find me on most social medias at SeanW78.
And so, who do we have to thank this week for our feedback?
Well, I'm going to blame this on Shinobi Tree because like half of these are just emojis. I think this is his audience weighing in. And so there's one emoji in particular that I really don't know what it is. So I'm just going to call it clap with jazz hands. Sure. It's where the hands are like they clapped, but now they're showing you their hands. So
that's like a hallelujah.
Well, it's not like a prayer. It's not applauding.
No, that's a high five, high ten. Yeah.
Oh, that's high five. Okay. Well, I still like clap with jazz hands.
I thought it was like overhead applause.
Okay. High five. Okay. So Robert Tolnai says, and this is feedback from the five questions episode we did with Shinobi Tree. Robert Tolnai says, great interview. Gumtree Hill Woodwork says, let's go. Jazz hands / high five. Swell Furniture says, great show. And routers, there's always room for one more. And that was a smiley face wearing sunglasses. Very cool smiley face. Camber Woodwork says, excited to listen to this one. Okay, here come the emojis. Charles Hobby says, fire, applause, jazz hands, heart. And ADI Bespoke Woodworking says, bear with me. Clap, 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 clap. Fire. Is that a salute or is that a guy with a carrot next
salute,
to his head?
Salute.
It's that's a salute. And two salutes. Salute. And it's very small on this screen. So that's it.
Very small.
If you have emojis that we haven't, that you don't think I'll understand what they mean, you can listen to my crazy translations here. And you can also use words. We can read
fire
words.
Away.
So yeah.
Here come the eggplant emojis.
Oh, no.
Yes. We appreciate your feedback, even if it's in emoji form. And keep it coming.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.